Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It is October 16th, 2012. I'm your host, Jeff Sakarik of thesuperfitvegan.com. Along with my co-host for this week, it's Megan the Vegan Wilmore of Facebook fame. And this is a show where we talk about all things related to the vegan lifestyle, everything impacting it that we can think of, and developing a high level of physical fitness. And if you were tuned in last week, we talked about the massive benefit of doing in-home workouts where you don't need any equipment, no weights, no gym memberships, nothing of that sort. We talked about the massive benefits of that. So if you missed that show, it's archived. And I'd recommend going and checking that one out. You can also get an idea of what you can accomplish just in a few minutes a day for your workouts by going to my YouTube channel. It's youtube.com/Jeff Sakarik. And check out some of the workouts there, and you'll find out very quickly. You do one of those 10-minute, 15-minute workouts, you'll find out that you can burn a massive amount of body fat, build lean, attractive muscle. And essentially, to my way of thinking and my experience, build the body of your dreams in just a few minutes a day with zero equipment. So if you want info on that, listen to last week's show on Blog Talk Radio. It's archived. And then go to my site, thesuperfitvegan.com, and I've got my YouTube channel link at the top of the page. So check that stuff out. And I think you'll like what you see. This week, we're going to talk about a handful of true horror stories that are running around out there on the internet, some true and some debatable. We're going to talk about one here to get started that may be true, it may not be. But the horror stories we're going to talk about this week can have a massive impact on your health. They can destroy it, in fact, if you're not aware of it. So we'll talk about those, and at the end of the show, we'll talk about if these stories are true, what exactly to do about it. I'll hand you a to-do list that I and Megan do consistently to keep poisons, such as the ones we're going to talk about tonight, out of your body. We'll take callers also, so if you've got a comment on any of these horror tales that we're going to talk about, or if you've got a personal story or a personal situation related to vegan fitness that you'd like addressed, you can call us at 718-664-6436 and give us a ring. We'll get you onto the show as quickly as possible. Are you there, Ruth Ann?
Oh, I'm here, yes. Ready okay. for callers, ready for whatever.
Yep. And Megan, you're there?
Yes, I'm here.
How was your week, Megan?
Well, it's only Tuesday, so it's early days yet, Jeff.
Let me rephrase that question. How was your last week since you haven't been on the show?
Well, interesting. The weather's been on and off. Like, we've had beautiful sunny days and then days where it's been snowing in the hills, which is really unusual for Adelaide. So it's been an interesting week.
Yeah, and you did, in fact, take up. I know you're working on an article I made Megan a pair of sandals, which I do all of my runs. In fact, Ruth Ann, I don't even own a pair of shoes now. I'm in the Philippines.
But, and you're coming back to cold weather?
Well, I'm coming back to Vegas probably to buy some additional property to support my crazy vegan lifestyle. But here in the Philippines, all I wear is the sandals that I run in, homemade for a couple dollars. And, hey, I can do it here because the weather is pretty balmy. But in Adelaide there, Megan, you've got some cold weather, and you went out for a good sandal clad run, which is just a hair away from barefoot, the other day. How was that?
Yeah, so I've been running minimalist style for the last 13 months in Vibram. And yes, we made the running sandals when we were together in Chiang Mai earlier this year. And I haven't had a chance to wear them here in Adelaide because it is just so cold during winter. But with spring now and some beautiful days there, I thought, right, I was ready to give them a go. And, yeah, it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe the difference between the running sandal and the Vibram. So I was pleasantly surprised. But I can say that I really don't know how I'd go wearing them in the winter months. So for spring and summer, yes. But autumn and winter, I may have to still revert to a closed-in minimalist shoe.
Yeah, maybe
I could wear socks with the sandal.
Well, you could, but if you're in any kind of snow, that stuff's going to get wet pretty quick.
Ooh, yeah.
No, it doesn't snow here in the main suburbs. It's just in the hills.
Well, then in that case, in my mind, you've got little or no excuse for returning back to a Vibram. You can get those Ininji, well, that's the brand that I use, those Ininji toe socks.
Yeah, I've got those. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just wondering how that would go with a sandal, but I'm guessing fine.
Yeah, it works very well. In the colder, now, when I left Vegas, just for the listeners, if you're out there listening, both Megan and I do barefoot or minimalist shoe running. I have done a lot of just flat-out barefoot running. I do not like it as much as homemade sandals. And to get an idea of what we're talking about, if you go to my YouTube channel, I show you how to make running sandals that cost...
easy.
Yeah, a couple dollars a pair to make. You can make them out of shoestring and carpet. And I picked the idea up after I read the book Born to Run by Christopher McDougall. And if you have not read that book, that thing is a must-read. It's rather legendary at this point in the running community for starting I wouldn't call it a craze, I'd call it just a reversion back to what human beings should be doing, which is running with less on their feet rather than these absurd, ridiculous Nike-like casts on your feet that do little more than dampen, deaden, and weaken and baby the over 30 different muscles, tendons, and ligaments that make up your foot. So what you need to do if you're out there listening is before you run another mile, read that book, Born to Run. And then you can also pick up a book on technique called Barefoot Running Step by Step by a guy named Ken Saxton. And if you read those two books, you'll get an idea of what we're talking about. You can go to my YouTube channel. I show you how to make those in a video, and I've got another video talking about the benefits and just a few tips and hints on sandal clad or barefoot running. It is absolutely the way to go. I would never go back to even a Vibram. As a matter of fact, when Megan and I were talking about this the other day, the Vibram issue versus the sandal issue, to me, only represents the dumbing down, the stupidity, the brainwashingness of man at large. The reason I say that is that barefoot running has been around for many, many years. What's his name? Bikawa, around the time, I believe it was just before JFK got murdered, it was around that time, won a marathon overseas. I can't remember if it was an Olympic marathon or what the case was, but he beat everybody in the world running barefoot through the cobblestone streets of Rome. And that started off in kind of a barefoot revolution. So this information has been out there for a while. However, with Nike and with the advent of the modern-day running shoe, much of the world westernized and exposed to modern media, as they have never been in world history, has been corporatized and dumbed down to the point where, hey, if it does not have a product attached to it, well, then, gee, it can't be real. Barefoot running, okay, it did not take off until Christopher McDougall came out with that book, and he touted the benefit of the Vibram. Barefoot running, to my way of thinking, you certainly don't need to pay $110 for a Vibram, which is not very comfortable anyway, with those toes between your foot, and the covering of the foot is horrible. The feeling of it does not do well. They stink. They allow you also to get away with mistakes that you cannot get away with in just a pair of sandals or your bare feet. They still allow you to strike with your heel first, which is essentially like putting the brakes on, and you're going to damage your hips and knees if you continue to do that. And I know that because where I bought my Vibrams initially in Vegas, the guy who sold them to me said, well, be careful on this because a lot of people are bringing them back because of knee damage and ankle damage. And I said, well, clearly they haven't read Born to Run and realized that you need to bend your knees and keep your back straight, and they have not gotten the technique down. However, you know what? If you don't wear the Vibrams and you go barefoot, as is outlined in Saxton's book that I just talked about, Barefoot Running Step by Step, or if you wear the sandals, I have found you cannot get away with the same mistakes that you can get away with in a Vibram. Have you found that to be true, Megan?
Yes, I have. It was just amazing, the difference and the feeling in my muscles. I think I did notice this when I first started minimalist running in the Vibram. So, yes, starting out, it was all new and you are conscious of your form. But, yeah, over the months, you do tend to just sort of rely more on the shoe. And so using the sandal, I couldn't believe after, you know, 15, 20 minutes, just the feeling in muscles that hadn't been used like that before, and the mental, like, just the mental aspect, having the focus, like, it was unbelievable. But, yeah, I got up last night in the middle of the night, and my feet, I couldn't believe the feeling in my feet just from using them, you know, like, concentrating and using them differently to the Vibrams was, yeah, really surprising.
Yeah, that's one if you call it a negative to the learning to run in the sandals, is you may, if you ever decide to wear shoes again, which I, you're going to probably have to get a larger shoe size because the muscles, tendons, ligaments, even your Achilles tendon will increase in size. That's a fact. You can take that to the bank. That is a freaking fact. My Achilles tendons are thicker than they were when I began this type of running about 2 years ago when I lived in Portland, Oregon. And I know what you're saying, Megan, because when I first started doing it, Portland, Oregon is a wet state. I shouldn't say it's a wet state, just that coastline.
Right.
The rest of, a lot of people don't know that. Oregon and Washington are great places to live. They kind of get a bad rap because of on the west coast there, it's just so wet, and it's very depressing. It rains all the time, or it rains, you know, 10 months of the year. I guess the benefits of that are when I lived there, boy, you can go running trail after trail after trail, and it's rare that you're going to see anybody because the weather's so bad. Also, the fact that it's wet, rocky, and muddy on a lot of those trails, it forces you to engage your core, particularly if you're wearing in the sandals, in a way that you do not do when you're wearing a Vibram or a regular shoe.
Yeah.
So to your point, Megan, I totally agree with that. Notice that because when you're wearing the homemade sandal, you're forced to mid-strike, land on the middle or the ball of your foot, and then your entire foot rests upon the surface. You relax your calf, lift that thing up off the ground, and you take another quick, short, deliberate stride, short stride, and you have a slight twisting action, like your hips are swiveling one after the other. If you can kind of picture that in your mind, I'm almost giving a running lesson here. You'll have a slight swiveling action to your hips that comes naturally. And what that does is it engages your core in a way that doesn't usually happen with shoes or with even the Vibram. So
yeah, my abs were burning, contracted and burning by the end of my run because of that, the holding your core and your form, and it was just, yeah, it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe the difference. Like having run for 13 months in Vibram, and I know we did a couple of sandy runs in Chiang Mai, but here I'm doing hill runs, and there were parts, gravelly parts, and so it was quite intense. And to just notice the difference, so I've done 3 sandal runs, the difference between that and the Vibram, yeah, it was astonishing.
And another benefit, before we move on in topic here, we'll do an entire show on this issue here at some point. Another issue on the sandal flat running that we haven't talked about is you get weird looks wherever you go. Doesn't matter where you go. And it's weird for me, particularly because I'm in one of the poorest countries that I've been in. I'm in the Philippines here. And you would not believe how westernized, down, and stupid this culture has become from society. The people here wearing the Nikes and the latest gear, as poor as they are, having trouble eating and getting clean water. Boy, you would think that they'd be more concerned about a vegan diet, a healthy diet, less cooked bird, and cleaner wool. They don't have all of that, but boy, they sure have got the Nikes on. And so when they see me running down the street in this $2 homemade sandals, I cannot go out there running without some people make fun of it. Other athletes, guys who are boxers, fighters, the one-on-one is big over here, have asked me about it specifically. And I've already made a pair for athletes over in Chiang Mai, and I made a couple here also. That's just another friend benefit. If you want to make friends and influence people, start wearing $2 sandals made out of cartilage string. Go for a run. That's a
thing. I don't understand, though. I don't understand the attraction when, like, you are in third world country. You have But we saw a local homeless without shoes. I think that this type of footwear would be more prevalent.
Keep going.
That noise. you're getting back to basics, and I just can't understand why it's such a big thing to
okay.
see.
Hold on, Megan. We're getting feedback from the show. If you have your link open to this show, close that.
Oh, yeah. It's just gone. It's just gone on for some reason. I've got rid of it now.
Okay, good enough. Say what you were just saying before the feedback hit. Go ahead.
I was just wondering why there is such an attraction to these, like, when they see you wearing these sandals, you know, like when we were over there, there were people without shoes, with barely any clothing whatsoever. These sandals, it's like getting back to basics. It's simple, accessible footwear, and I just can't understand the attraction, why people think it's so weird.
What did we talk about when we were over in the Comores Islands? For anybody who's listening, Megan and I were over in islands off the coast of Cebu in the Philippines a couple of weeks ago, called the Comores Islands. Beautiful area. But what did we talk about over there? We talked about the fact that these people would probably be a whole lot happier. They didn't seem to be all that happy, and they were vicious toward tourists. They would probably be a whole lot happier if they did not have Westerners walking around with things that they don't have. And that's what I see here in the Philippines. Again, the culture has become the world outside of perhaps the Middle Eastern countries, which obviously NATO and the powers that be, the vicious, psychotic, elitist powers that are trying to turn them into a westernized paying currency to banks, paying interest on money that doesn't exist. They're trying to get them into the Western culture. They don't want a part, any part of it. That's what all those wars are about, in case you're wondering, mm-hmm. down to the last one on Earth. But the point, my point of this is that when these cultures are exposed to Westerners and the media, westernized media, showing them allegedly what is the ideal way to live, now their friends, for example, around in Nikes. Well, now you're not even alive. You're not even human if you're wearing a pair of indigenous thongs or sandals or whatever is normally would be on your feet. Now you have a chasm, a tear in the consciousness that binds an indigenous people together. And that's what westernized media does to indigenous cultures. It forms a rift, a tear, a chasm in the pride of indigenous people just through the media, just through the media, and just through the taking away of children from what their parents knew to be good enough for them. That's my opinion on what we've seen, and I've seen a lot of these cultures up close and personal, so I'm not just pulling this out of thin air. When these people see people with Western gear on, all of a sudden that becomes what you need to have. And the cheaper way to go is just that's for losers. And what we're finding, Megan, is that is just very simply not the case, and it shouldn't be like that, should it?
No, but also, like, thongs, you know, the rubber thongs, I don't know if you call them thongs, flip-flops, I suppose, but,
yep.
you know, a lot of people have wore those. They are a common footwear item, and I can't see that the sandals that we make really is much different. It's the same principle. It just has the string or the rope going around the ankle. I'm just so surprised that everywhere we went, and I know we got stared at anyway because we were outsiders, but even in Thailand, everywhere we went, people stared at your feet.
That's really funny.
Bob came back and watched, and everyone would comment, point, laugh. It was just, yeah, it's amazing the attention that they get. And I was expecting that when I went on my run, but they just aren't the crowds. You know, like, I can run the streets here, and it's just there's not the crowds that we experience overseas. So you get cars driving past, and I'm sure they look to see what the hell she wearing, but you don't have the staring or the animosity or the laughing and joking like we experienced overseas.
You're forgetting a major point there, though. You're forgetting a major point, and that is this. In many ways, I live for, this may be a character flaw that I should probably be working on. I live for reactions like that. I enjoy getting a reaction out of people. I consider the mass of man, I consider most people, this is why I have such a difficult time communicating and relating to my fellow man. I live almost like a hermit. I've only got a few friends on Earth. I spend the mass amount of my time on the computer. And a large part of that is, number one, I'm trying to build a business. But number two is I have grown so in the other direction from the mass of man who sits there, eats meat, watches ball games. Not that there's anything wrong with ball games inherently. But at a time like this, with what our government is doing, you know, non-Congress-approved wars, approving genetically modified foods, basically destroying and raping the entire United States population along with the rest of the world. In a time like this, as serious as the health of United States citizens has become, where now one out of two are going to be getting cancer and heart disease by 2015, and there's nowhere to work, and the society is falling apart at the seams in every conceivable way, I just have a difficult time relating to the average, to most people that still seem to be wrapped up in the idiocy and the idea that their vote means anything and that there's any difference between these whores, Romney and Obama, that are nothing more than corporate talk pieces. They were bought off long ago. They would not be in the positions that they're in if they were did not have their campaign contributions paid for by the Monsantos and the pharmaceutical corporations of the world. So none of that is going to change anything. At this point in human life, especially in America, I look at it like, look, the best that we can, I personally believe, and this is just my opinion after looking at all of this information for many, many years, humanity as we know it is about to be mutated into something that we don't want to be mutated into. We already know that scientists are mixing human genes with computers. And they're predictively programming the population to accept this with films. It seems that every other science fiction film I see now has the barcode on the back of the hero's head or has something to do with the mixing of robotic and human genetics. My point of saying all this is that I think we're kind of in the last days of humanity's volition and freedom that it has now. So what do we do about this? Well, in my opinion, the first thing you do is set an example and live in a way spiritually. Take care of yourself spiritually first, physically and spiritually, and set an example. That's the best you can do to create a ripple in human consciousness, in the human consciousness, if you will. And that's, I believe, the best you can do. Set an example, and if people ask you about what you're doing, don't push it on them. But just tell them what you're doing, and that's what Megan and I try to do. What was my point in getting to all of that? I got a little...
That you didn't want to fit in. You liked being a spectacle.
Oh, yeah. I like being a spectacle of the throwing shoes. Listen, when everything is said and done, I try to live my life by these words, by Shaw. The reasonable man adapts himself to the world. The unreasonable one persists in trying to adapt the world to himself. Therefore, all progress depends on the unreasonable man. And that's exactly right. If you cannot relate to your fellow humans who are more wrapped up with ball games and fantasy football and distractions of that sort, if you have a problem relating to that in times like those that we live in, I'm right there with you. So that's why I try to live my life in a way that the masses do not, which have no idea how the world works that they live in. As long as we're talking about that, there's a movie that I recommend everybody see. And that is one with Michael Shannon that Megan and I watched. It's called Take Shelter. And it's directed by a guy who has done at least one other excellent movie called Shotgun Stories. And this movie is just the theme of it, if you will. The theme of it is that it kind of goes hand in hand with the Shaw quote that I just read about the unreasonable man. The storyline has to do with a guy, the protagonist, that sees a storm coming that's going to affect his entire small town that he lives in. And throughout the film, we see evidence that he may be onto something. Yet, because society has become so inculcated and brainwashed with their day-to-day lives, they put no stock in this guy's predictions. To the point where he begins to doubt himself. And by the end of the film, which is just a heartbreaking ending of a film, one that is absolutely beautiful, it's handled in a beautiful way, great camera, great writing, a minimalist approach to the film. By the end of the film, you get the idea as watching it that perhaps if you have a crazy idea or two, or perhaps if you have difficulty relating to your fellow man, it may behoove you to live by your ideals rather than to be strictly if those around you. That's kind of the theme of it, and it's one heck of a film, so I recommend watching that, Take Shelter. As a matter of fact, if there's anything more important in your life going on right now than going on to Amazon and getting a copy of that film.
Yeah, it was good.
Did you see that one right then?
No, I haven't. My movie going is pretty limited to if it's online, but I did make a note of that. And you said Michael Shannon?
Yeah, the actor is Michael Shannon, who's very good. He was in a film called Bug with Ashley Judd, which is also an important film. Bug, directed by Friedkin, who did The Exorcist. Mm. A good film worth watching. So,
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, we'll need to watch that one. But you don't like scary stuff. That one will scare the heck out of you. All right, moving on. So let's get to we have definitely gotten off track on this show, and we were going to talk about, I guess we may as well talk about this article, Megan, that we...
horrible article.
Let's get to it, because I ended the show last week saying we're going to get to it, and we have not.
Yes. People will be hanging out to hear about this one particular article, so I think it's important that you do cover it.
Yes. All right, here it is. Here it is. In my opinion, there's a lot of people that don't like natural news. I know that out there. And believe me, I don't believe anything that I read on any site on the Internet. However, and this is a big however, I'm very glad that Mike Adams is out there doing the work that he's doing on natural news.
Yes.
His site acts, to my way of thinking, almost as a clearinghouse for information related to everything that we talk about in this show, poisons that are possibly affecting you that you don't know about in your everyday life, lifestyle, fitness, all of it. So naturalnews.com, I go to it every day for a few minutes. Anyway, the article that we wanted to talk about, here it is, it's 2011 by Ethan Huff, who's a staff writer at Natural News, and the article headline is Japanese Scientist Create Edible Meat Alternative Made from Recycled Human Waste. And I'm going to go ahead and just start reading here. I'll kind of bullet point this. I might not read the whole thing. If you think meatless, genetically modified soy food products are a poor alternative to real meat, wait until you see the latest in vegetarian meat replacement technology. According to a recent In Habitat report, Japanese researcher Mitsuyuki Aikida has developed a new kind of meatless burger made from steak sauce essence and, brace yourself, protein matter extracted from human excrement. Aikida's burger is literally derived from sewage mud, which is a nice way of saying that it was created from human waste. By extracting the protein and lipids from this mud, Aikida was able to take these components, add a reaction enhancer to them, and process the mud into a meat-like product. He then added a steak flavoring, and it goes on to say how he makes it taste like beef. According to the reports, the product is 60% protein. Well, that's way too much. 25% carbs, that's wrong.
Yeah.
That's too much. We need to have about 80% carbs in our diet. And here's what he says. I admit that few people would be keen to eat it, knowing it's made of human excrement, said Aikida in an interview. As far as the cost is concerned, because at the moment it includes the cost of research, it's 10 to 20 times more expensive than normal meats. Oh, my God. But once the research is complete and it's put on the market, it'll be priced at the same level as regular meat. Boy, I can't wait. So that's that article. And my initial reaction is I tend to believe it word for word. And yet, Megan, you did a bit of research on it. You're telling me it's a hoax. Tell me why.
Yeah. As soon as I read it, even the... just the idea of it, I'm like, is this a joke? Like, there's no way. I can't see how anything like this could even be possible. And so I did a bit of a search, and I got results saying that, yes, like, days after this article was written, there's statements saying, yes, that it is a hoax and a joke.
Did you,
so, To me, it was. Like, I was reading it like, there's no way. Why would you even bother? It's disgusting. And who would eat it anyway?
Let me play devil's advocate to your reaction there. First of all, by the time it's on, I would put money on this personally. They're already making it. This stuff, they've already been doing this for years. Some of these soy burgers that are out on the market, depending on who the manufacturer is of them, I would put money on it personally that people are already eating this stuff and do not even know it. We know in the United States that there's a big push by the Monsantos of the world who bribe or lobby your elected public officials to state that they don't have to say that they have genetically modified ingredients. As a matter of fact, they don't have to say specifically what any of their ingredients are.
That's right.
So the bottom line is you cannot trust anything that you put in your mouth that comes in a box anymore at this point, unless you seriously check it out. Number two, I know that every time an article gets put out there that outs some type of government shenanigans, lies, disinformation, or anything that threatens the credibility of government work or corporate work in any way, that immediately on the internet gets a counterpoint put on it. So my initial reaction, just an example of that, Ray and I talked about this on one of the initial shows. The first experiments on genetically modified research that were done by Arpad Pusztai, a researcher in France, came out saying that it caused organ damage in rats. Genetically modified potatoes caused severe organ damage, liver damage in rats. Well, when he came out with that, he was immediately fired from his job. I forget the company for, but later it doesn't really matter because it later came out that the company he worked for received its financing from Monsanto. What does that tell you? What it tells you is this. Any time that you read a story like the one we're talking about here, and then you get a counterpoint to it. Oh, by the way, Monsanto burned all of his research and then discredited him.
Right.
My point of that is anytime you read a story like this and then you hear immediate blowback on it, oh, that can't be true. First of all, remember that most people are stupid. They're probably already eating this stuff and they don't even know it. That's my opinion. Yeah. Number two is that companies that are involved in this are not going to just let stories like this, particularly on Natural News, get away with it because this is a very well-known site. Number three is these corporations that we've talked about this on other shows. You've only got a handful of corporations run by about 13 families that essentially have, at this point in human history, taken over the world, to my thinking, based on the research that I've done. And they, for the first time in human history, we've got just a handful of corporations that essentially own all the major media outlets in all of the major countries throughout the world, and they're working on the Middle Eastern countries, as you can see.
Yeah.
These corporations allegiance to any one country. They have no allegiance to humanity as a whole. Most people are not aware that your body in the United States you don't even own your own body. It is traded on the New York Stock Exchange. It's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. You are a human resource, nothing more, to these corporations that rule the world at this point in human history. And they specialize in my mind, and based on what I've looked at, the owners of these corporations specialize and adhere to a spiritual, almost a religion of survival of the fittest. They were here first. They are superior, elitist. And it would not surprise me in the least if there was a spiritual reason behind stories like this. They want to get you to eat your own human waste. They want you to go through airports and put your hands up. In the Philippines, where I am, where the New World Order is a lot further along in many ways than it is in the U.S., they want to set the precedent that when you go into a mall or shopping center, they are going to put their hands on you. The security is. They're going to check your bags and put their hands on you. They're speaking to you, these corporations, in the oldest language known to man, and that is symbology. It has nothing to do with language. Is there any other reason in the United States when you go through an airport to put your hands up when you go through that TSA scanner? No, there is not. Putting your hands up and getting you into a subservient position, they are speaking to you in the oldest language known to man. My theory,
I haven't had to do that.
All right. Well, then go to America, and you'll be in for a shocker.
Well, I went there in 07. I don't recall having to put my arms up. I just walked through.
All right. Well, then you got lucky, because it's the standard. Then what you're describing is the exception to the rule. And to the credit of a lot of people, if it wasn't for the Alex Joneses of the world, a guy who's got a good radio show in the U.S., if it wasn't for guys like that, the TSA work would be even a lot further along than it is. It's only because of the blowback of the public.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So if you're seeing cases or if you haven't had to put your hands up, believe me, it's the exception to the rule. And if it wasn't for the public blowback, they'd be further along than it is. My point of this is this. Getting humans to put their hands up and eat their own human waste very well may be spiritual or near religious reasons by these corporations for doing that. Am I wrong, Marie Pham? What's your take on that?
I actually think you're right, because it's all about energy and controlling it. So I think you're right.
I think I am too. Am I overreacting here, Megan? What do you think, Megan? Am I overreacting to this?
No, I knew you'd have a view on it, and that's what I was interested in hearing. But just, I mean, the story comes across as ridiculous. But I know that what you say does have some credence to it. It's just reading this is disgusting.
I think sometimes they try the things that they, as far as like making it sound ridiculous, so people will say, well, that's ridiculous, they would never do that, while behind the scenes they're wildly doing it, because they think that, well, we give them more credit, like they wouldn't do such a thing, but they
did. You watch the video on it, Jeff?
No, I did not watch the video on it, so I'll have to do that. I am giving you based upon, I gave the example to you of the Monsanto case and how that worked, and I'm giving you my initial impressions of it. So perhaps we'll do a little bit more legwork on this and come back with some info on it next week. To me, it doesn't even matter if this particular story is true or not, because I have another article here that without a doubt is absolutely true, and that is that the FDA claims walnuts to be illegal drugs. Government lunacy at its best. The FDA, which is they've just long since, they're supposed to be in America looking after the health of the taxpayers that help fund them. Instead, they have become nothing more than de facto employees of the drug companies. And so they're at a point where they have, at this point in American history, say that only a drug can cure a disease, which is a flat-out lie, and they claim that walnuts are illegal drugs. So the bottom line is whether or not one story of corporate or government malfeasance with regard to our health is true or it is not true, the overall fact of the matter, if you look at genetically modified foods, vaccines endorsed by our government and the corporations that bribe them or lobby them, and their idea of what cures human illness, all of that has gone into the toilet long, long ago. So it's not that to me if this one case is true. And based upon all that, I tend to think that it's probably true. That's my initial thought about it. Okay, so anyway, what do we got? We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Is that right, Ruth Ann?
Yes. Yeah.
I think 9. Oh, okay.
All right. Well, we got about 10 or so minutes left. Why don't we talk about, we spent a little bit of time talking about the barefoot running today. We got sidetracked on that, but I'm glad that we did, because if you're listening and you're considering getting involved in more of a minimalistic lifestyle that connects you closer to the earth, that Rick Corbin gives you a great workout, minimalist shoe running is the way to go. Get the book Born to Run. Get the book Barefoot Running Step by Step by Ken Saxton. That'll show you the exact technique to do it. Go to my YouTube channel. All you have to do is go to thesuperfitvegan.com, and I've got my YouTube link at the page. If you go to that YouTube channel, I've got a couple of videos showing you how to make sandals and my tips on how to run in them, and that'll get you off to a good start. So we covered that. And then the rest of the show here, we've been talking about this. Yeah, that's exactly correct, and whether or not that's true or not. But I think we all agree that there's quite a few poisons in our modern diets. And I wanted to get into, in this last few minutes that we have, what are the best ways to combat? What do we do about genetically modified foods in the diet? What do we do about all the poisons that are in processed foods? And make no mistake out there, because we know that, because cancer and heart disease, and the high incidence of cancer in human history now is a relatively new. Even 100 years ago, cancer was virtually unknown, particularly in children. And now, by 2015, the American Cancer Society estimates that 1 in 2 people are going to get cancer at some point in their life. Well, what's changed? Well, what's changed is the public's massive intake of poisonous vaccines, which are laced with mercury, formaldehyde, and a bunch of other garbage. It's intake of processed foods, and it's lack of intake of organic fresh fruits and vegetables. That's what's changed. So, to me, the number one thing we can do to combat this, to make yourself an example of good health in the horror show that our world has become, the first thing you can do is go through your cupboards and throw out everything that is not an organic or a really well-washed fruit or vegetable, nut or seed, or an organic bean or an organic potato. I would get rid of everything else. What do you think, Megan?
Well, yeah, I thought you were going to say get rid of all your processed food.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea.
Get back to basics. Mm-hmm. Try and choose organic when, wherever possible. It's ridiculous how much more expensive is, double, sometimes triple the cost. So I stick to certain products like apples. I'll always buy organic apples. There's certain products they say are worse off than others. So I try to buy those items organic, and then especially carrots. I'll buy organic carrots, organic potatoes, things that are grown in, like in the earth,
mm-hmm.
in particular.
They tend to soak up pesticides.
They're called carrots the sponges of the earth. So I refuse to buy carrots if they're not organic. I don't have anything more to say on that.
Opt out of drugs and vaccines. Get rid of any kind of prescription drugs that you're on if possible. Opt out of any type of vaccine if at all possible.
What worries me is that you're saying about vaccines, and years ago I was actually contacted and asked to be part of a study because I was a female born in a particular year at a particular hospital.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to do this in-depth study on girls born in this year at a hospital, and you had to answer so many different questions. Were you suffering this? And it's a bit scary to think, who knows what they actually injected us with back then. And then they're wanting to see the results. It really bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
They never told you? They never told you what that was about?
It was to do something to do with ovarian cysts or menstrual cycles, and I can't remember exactly. I've got the paperwork somewhere because it's years ago, like it was back 2004, 2003 that they first contacted me. But the questions that it was asking me everything, did you have excessive hair, you know, like, on your body? Did you suffer depression? Have you had any eating disorders? They were asking a massive range of questions. And it makes me wonder.
I wonder
exactly what it is. Like, imagine seeing the results that came back in, whether there was something that all of us born at that time were suffering, or really interesting and depressing at the same time.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, because now I don't think that if you've got 500 brain cells to rub together, if you're out there still, there's a solid link between autism, the high incidence of autism in modern man, and vaccines, then you probably need to go to a hotel room and get seriously deprogrammed by the likes of Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who is probably the world's foremost authority on the link between autism and vaccines. All you have to do is, if you doubt that, you can start by going to an interview with Alex Jones and Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Just Google Alex Jones, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and you'll get a good breakdown of what's contained in these vaccines and their consequences. And just, you know, you don't even really need to listen to the whole interview. Sense. You've got to develop a child developing immune system doesn't know what to do. And we know now that the immune system develops and gets better and better by fending off attackers and by dealing with the environment. So to try and scientifically circumnavigate that and cheat your way around it is going to do nothing more than destroy the immune system. And the makers of these vaccines know that. They've got enough money to know that. And so the only logical reason for them to do such a thing is there's a spiritual reason involved in it, which we've hinted at on the show.
Or control. Somehow.
Yes, they want to get you dependent on them. They want to get you dependent on them. And the American, all of the cancer industries, the vaccine industries, and you are surviving off organic foods and you're not dependent on the government and you're not dependent on modern medical care, the nickel. So it is in their best to keep a public that is poor, dependent, ill, totally dependent on the state.
And ignorant.
And ignorance and the rest of it. So, when you look at it deeper, as I know you and I have, I don't hold out a whole lot of hope for mankind as a species at this point. I think that we can do at this point in our history is lead by example. And as Jordan Maxwell would say, and quietly talk to whatever call and ask them to do to maintain health. And sit there until you get an answer, and act as if you're talking to a very high up important person, and wait for an answer and watch what happens. And you'll be amazed. I did this years ago when I first got involved in the raw vegan diet. You'll be amazed at how information seems to come at you just seemingly out of nowhere. You'll be thinking of an issue related to vaccines, or you'll be thinking of an issue like, well, what should I be eating for the majority of my diet? And an answer will just come to you out of the cosmos, for want of a better term.
You tell me did last week, Jeff.
I try to do it every week. I think it's a good practice to do.
I haven't done it yet. Maybe I need to do it tonight.
And then we'll talk about your results next week. You can keep a journal. That's a good idea to keep a journal after you do something like that. You'll be amazed at how information, you'll ask a question or put out a thought that you need something and how information seems to attract to you. Your thought process seems to attract to you that which you need.
Oh, yeah. I know, but then I have to wonder, just me creating that answer.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Oh, that's what I'd be thinking now. Have I just created that own answer that I wanted?
It's an amalgamation. It's an amalgamation. It's a combination of the two. You have to look at it, in my mind, in my opinion, that you're working with the, if you want to call it karma or the great spirit, as the Indians, American Indians call it, you're working with that spirit versus the more Western, if you want to call it Christian approach of preaching. If you preach all the time and talk, and you're not listening, and you're talking without listening, you can see where that gets humanity.
Yeah.
And you can see that gets a Christianity as a religion, not in a very good way right now. So, last minute comments. I think that we've covered some good info on this show, the barefoot running. We've talked about the poisons in the diet and what we need to do about them. I think what I get out of it is trust no one, especially humans. Read the labels. Make sure there's nothing poisonous in it. If you can't understand what's on it, move on to something else. Make organic produce the bulk of your diet.
If you can grow it.
Yeah. I was going to say that. Grow your own if possible.
Exercise as if your life depended on it. You know,
it does.
Renewing recreation, that word recreation, that word recreating yourself at a cellular level. Break a sweat every day. Do a good workout. Opt out of vaccines. Take vitamins. Clean your kitchen with all the processed foods, and you'll be well on your way being what we talked about earlier, an unreasonable man. And by being unreasonable, you very well may not become one of the statistics of one out of two getting cancer these days.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts, Megan?
Just a point on the avoid thing. It's horrible that new these days are put in the predicament of having to, they're almost, we're forced into vaccinating your children, and if you don't, you're ostracized and make you feel, you know, guilty and wrong, and it's horrible that you're put into that predicament.
Yeah, they've made it a de facto crime to opt out of it, but if you, if you're listening out there, and you're interested in how to opt out of it at your workplace or for your children, go to that interview with Alex or Sherry Tenpenny. Just Google it. It'll lead you to the – Dr. Tenpenny has forms and paperwork that you can download over the Internet that will help you to opt out of that stuff.
Yes, you don't need to opt – you can choose not to, but my sister said the young – vaccinated, but then, you know, the doctors are all for schooling. You know, you can only attend schools if the vaccine. They make it like it's impossible to get by without having to do that, and that's annoying. It's so annoying.
It certainly is. Absolutely. Okay, Ruth Ann, we're down to, what, a minute here to go?
Yeah, 50 seconds.
All right, any last minute thoughts, Ruth Ann?
No, I was just thinking about some things I want to bring up or have you bring up in a show or two down the road about the disconnect people feel. While if you talk to them, they feel very compassionate toward animals, and then they go and cook up a steak. I don't get the disconnect thing. I experienced some of that recently. And it was.
Megan and I have had some long conversations about that. That sounds like a good topic for next week. So we'll be talking about that next week. Megan will be back, and we'll disconnect and why it is perhaps we'll talk about a little bit about Collins' work, about why humans consider it acceptable to eat one animal and then have another one when they share 0.9% of the same DNA, you know, difference between eating a dog versus a pig, and on it goes. Right. So, and it boils back again down to this. We'll get into that next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you later.